Chapter 15, Journey. They left early the next morning, before breakfast. Orvin claimed he wanted to get an early start on the trip, but Princess suspected that he mostly wanted to avoid a big goodbye scene. Everyone had already said everything they needed to say, and they had a superstition that it was unlucky to watch someone leave.
Princess and her family awoke to make their final preparations to leave after the black goat's morning knock.
Bonnie had already assumed Princess's goat-milking chore, but didn't say a word to them as they returned from their morning ablutions. Sin had been awakened by the goat's crash, as had everyone else, but no one other than Bonnie came out of their homes, and the five of them walked silently to the stream and disappeared into the forest. Today's walk would be double the distance of their castle trip, but it would be far faster without a cart. They each carried a pack with some food, clothes, and in the case of Princess, everything she owned and wanted to keep should she elect not to return. The possibility of never going home weighed heavy on Princess's thoughts, and she reached over to hold Sin's hand for reassurance as they walked.
They had just begun traveling on the road when Hugh saw someone standing ahead of them.
They stopped, but the man didn't move, and they decided to proceed cautiously. Princess's heart was pounding, and everyone was scanning the forest for his partners when Sin shouted, "Bead!" Bead turned towards them and began trotting in their direction.
"What are you doing here, Bead?" asked Hugh.
"I decided to join you," Bead replied.
"But what about your sheep? The village needs you, Bead. You can't come," answered Hugh.
"I only have 2 sheep left, and Roe agreed to take over for me," answered Bead. "Besides, I need to get out of that valley, and you could use an extra pair of hands and a strong sword on the trail."
"Roe is only 9 years old, Bead," said May.
"Which is 1 year older than when I started," grinned Bead. "And he's been helping me with the sheep all spring. He'll do fine. You see, I've had lots of time to think and plan. This is not a rash decision. I've been preparing for weeks."
"But still, the village will be worried about you being missing,"
said Hugh. "I don't approve of you being here." "Both Roe and Tate know what I'm doing," Bead firmly replied, "and there is nothing you can say to change my mind.
The only one who can order me back is Edlin."
Everyone turned to stare at Princess, who suddenly felt incredibly embarrassed. This was the second time Bead had hinted that he knew of her heritage, but how could he know? And what should she do?
"I'm not sure why my opinion would matter. After all, Orvin and Hugh are the village elders," she sputtered. Bead just looked at her, raised an eyebrow, and looked as if he were going to answer.
"But I don't see a problem if Bead joins us," she quickly added. "It sounds like he left everything under control back home, and the village will be fine. And he's right. We would be safer with him in our group." Princess was anxious. She had just gone against the wishes of her father, who was also a village elder. Had she made the right decision? Bead smiled a satisfied grin, and Orvin said, "Well, let's get going. There's no point standing here all day arguing. I hope you brought the right supplies, boy."
"Yes, sir," Bead happily answered as he grabbed a sack from the bushes. "Food, water, a change of clothes, and a sword." All the men were carrying swords. Princess had her bow and arrows, and May had a wooden pike which doubled as a walking stick. Hugh and May nodded at Bead, Orvin grunted, and Sin slapped him on the back and said, "Welcome to the Fellowship." Princess felt great. Perhaps she had done the right thing. Their packs were heavy, but they walked quickly and quietly. Hugh and Orvin kept a constant eye on the forest ahead, and Bead kept checking behind for highwaymen, but they saw no one. At mid-morning, they passed a small overgrown road branching off to the left. It was clear that no one had traveled it for many years, and Hugh, Orvin, and May all stopped, bowed their heads, and uttered a short prayer to the gods. Hugh saw the questioning looks of the 3 younger people and said, "Mjoln," and began walking.
"What was that about?" Sin asked Princess as they left.
Bead leaned in to listen.
"Mjoln must have been another village in our kingdom," answered Princess with a sniff. "This was the route the dragon took, so the only things down there now are bones, weeds, and charred wood." Sin felt a chill run down his spine. He didn't need to visit the village to know she was right. The road did not appear to have been traveled in 7 years. He had never heard of anyone believing in dragons before meeting these people.
Of course, he had also never heard of any of these ruined villages. How could every town and village in an entire kingdom be wiped from the map and forgotten? Bede's eyes grew wide. "How do you know?" he asked. "Have you seen one of these villages before? Was it on your castle trip?" Princess nodded as he fought back her tears, and Sin said, "Let's not talk about it now, Bede. I'll fill you in later." Bede immediately stopped his questioning, and Princess squeezed Sin's hand in gratitude. A while later, they passed a similar, old, unused road on the right. All six travelers stopped and bowed their heads. "That used to be Watalai," Hugh solemnly stated. "It was a smaller village than ours on the most eastern border of our kingdom. The next town, Frome, considered it associated with them, but the people of Watalai themselves proudly proclaimed their allegiance to Osred." He sighed a heavy sigh and added, "I wonder if Frome is still there." "Assuming it is," interjected Orphan, "now is an excellent time to discuss our strategy for interacting with other villages. Very few people travel this road, and we need a story. Hugh, Guderian, and I discussed this at length and proposed that we say we are travelers from Axbridge, visiting relatives near Wilton in hopes of finding a new home. We're an extended family, and our farm recently burned down. We had been struggling with our crops for years anyway, and decided that Woden was telling us to leave. No one else had a better idea, so everyone agreed with the story. One more thing," added Hugh. "We need always to be discreet. We should spend as little time as possible talking to the people we meet. We can't let anyone know about our village's existence, and we can't let anyone know about Sin." Laughed Sin. "That's going to be a little difficult, since I'm right here. Besides, why am I a secret?" "Because you went missing on this road 2 months ago and are from a wealthy family," Orvin answered with annoyance in his voice. "I'm certain there's a reward out for you, and I, for one, don't want us to be killed so that you can be tied up and delivered home for some bounty." Everyone other than the two older men froze. None of them had considered the dangers of traveling with Sin. "You're right," agreed Sin. "I'm sure my family did post a reward, and I'm putting you in danger. I should go on by myself." "Nonsense, Sin. That's just crazy talk," laughed Orvin to Princess's and Sin's relief. "You wouldn't make it to the other side of Frome by yourself. We're taking you to Wilton, where we'll hire a coach to take you home." "Hire a coach?" asked Sin in surprise. He knew they only agreed to take him as far as Wilton, but hadn't considered how he was going to get the rest of the way to Dorchester. "But that will cost a lot of money." It was Hugh's turn to laugh. "We brought a little with us when we fled our homes, and we don't need it in our isolated valley. Everyone donated whatever they had. There will be enough for a few nights' lodging, a few meals, and your coach." Sin was shocked and embarrassed he had ever suspected these people were associated with the men who attacked him. They not only saved his life and nursed him back to health, but they were also risking their lives and donating everything of value they had to get him home. Sin was sure he didn't know anyone else who would have done this for a complete stranger. "How can I ever repay you?" he asked. "We can't, because you can never tell anyone about us or ever return to our village," answered Horvin. "But you can take good care of my granddaughter if she decides to stay with you. Now, enough talking about this. Let's get moving. Oh, and by the way, your name is Edwin for the remainder of our journey. I'm hoping that the people in these parts don't know what you look like, but I'm sure they've all heard your name and the reward associated with it."
"Edwin?" asked Sin.
"It means prosperous friend," laughed Hugh. "Guderian may be old and crotchety, but he still has a sense of humor." "Come on, Edwin," Princess laughed as she took Sin/Edwin's arm. "Let's get you home." Frome was still very much alive and was triple the size of Princess's home village. The village itself was built on a hill above a river and was surrounded by the largest expanse of open space Princess had ever seen. There were neat fields and sprawling pastures filled with sheep. Bede was amazed at the size of the flocks. "Frome is known for two things," Hugh said. "They produce a lot of raw and woven wool, and they have a ferry to cross the river. If Frome had been destroyed, then we would have had to pass directly through the destruction, and I'm not sure how we would have crossed the river." "That last point is significant because this is the only crossing point over this fast-moving river for many, many miles, which makes Frome a crossroads and is why Osred's kingdom stopped just to the west and north of it." Frome is where the road we just traveled meets the road to Bath and the southern route to Cheddar. Osred's soldiers protected the first two, and, assuming the northern part of his kingdom was destroyed as well, I suspect that Frome hasn't been doing much business with Bath for the past 7 years. We'll need a good reason why we took the northern route from Cheddar rather than the safer southern route.
It's shorter, answered May. That was the reason it was the preferred route in the old days. We're on foot, wanted the shortest route, and felt there were enough of us to ward off any thieves, especially since we have very little of value.
It'll have to do, grumbled Orvin. Okay, we'll stop for lunch and hire the ferry, but remember, don't talk any more than you have to.
Everyone stared at them as they walked into town, and no one said a word. Princess realized that Hugh and Orvin were right. Anyone traveling down the old road to Cheddar was now viewed with suspicion. Princess's and Bede's eyes were wide with amazement as they walked into town. The buildings weren't built much differently than their own, but there were so many more. Also, there were houses for travelers to rent, and a tavern offering food and drink. This was welcome news for the travelers, because thick clouds had darkened the midday sun to twilight, and they were eager to find a place to stay dry and have some lunch. They stopped in a tavern to purchase a meal and inquire about the ferry.
"How be on?" asked the owner as the six of them entered the pub. "We be varin' to Midland. It's gettin' dimpsy, bain't it?"
answered Orvin.
"In it snuff. What be gwine have?" answered the barkeep. "Gi's a bit and drap for nummet and a girt pint of mead," replied Orvin. "Let me see ye dibs, Dan," demanded the barkeep.
Hugh reached for his money bag, but Sin stopped him by putting his hand on Hugh's shoulder and shaking his head. "Trust me, this is my world," he said as he walked over to the barkeep and began negotiating a price. Princess gave Bede a questioning look, and he shook his head in bewilderment, so she leaned over to May and asked, "What language is that? What do they say, and what is Sin doing?"
"Shh, dear, his name is Edwin, remember?" May whispered.
"Yeah, sorry, but what's going on?" Princess repeated.
May laughed and answered, "They're speaking the same language as us, but the local dialect and accent can be difficult to understand. Your grandfather ordered us some lunch, but while my father and my husband are both well-educated people, they have no business sense. Your father was about to show the money we are carrying, but your boyfriend appears to be a more experienced negotiator."
Sin had pulled out a few coins and seemed to be in a heated argument with the owner, and the rest of them tensed.
He turned to them and strode over with a bright red face.
"Get up, we're leaving," he said in a loud voice. Hugh started to object, but Sin grabbed him by the shirt and said,
"Now."
They quickly got up, left the pub, and began walking down the street.
"What have you done, Sin?" Hugh hissed at him. "We have to cross that river."
"Shush," said Sin with a sly grin, "and the name is Edwin, remember?"
A moment later, a small boy rushed up to them and offered Sin some sort of apology. Sin stopped, turned back towards a barkeep who was standing in the doorway, spat on the ground, yelled something back, and started walking again. The barkeep yelled something, and Sin stopped again. This time he nodded his head, raised his arm, and waved the group back to the pub. When they were seated, he explained.
"That tavern owner thinks we're a bunch of ignorant farmers," he began.
"Which is what we want him to believe," interrupted Hugh.
"Yes, but not to the point where he can take advantage of us," replied Sin. "He was trying to overcharge us for the food and claimed that we also needed to rent a room because he sold the ferry tickets and the last one had left for the day."
"But it's just midday," exclaimed Princess.
"Exactly," laughed Sin. "Oh, and he took one look at our money, said it was old and worthless, and doubled his price. So I called his bluff and left."
"What was with the spitting?" asked Bede.
"Oh, that," grinned Sin. "He had agreed to meet my original price for the meal, but I said I was too insulted to eat here. I said we were going to talk to the ferryman directly about crossing the river, informing him what the tavern owner had claimed. Now our mead is on the house."
Orwin roared and slapped Sin on the back. "Edwin, my boy, I was right. You do have potential."
They had an excellent lunch, a safe river crossing, and an uneventful trip to Worgenminster that afternoon. Everyone's spirits were raised since leaving the uninhabited forests of Fjergensen. The kingdom of Wessex was alive. The trees had been trimmed back from the road, which not only made it feel safer, it made it brighter. Princess hadn't realized how depressing walking in the shaded gloom of the forest had been. Walking in sunshine speckled through the leaves felt great. She hadn't felt the same about the ferry ride, though. That was the first time she had ever been on any sort of boat, and she clung to Sin for the entire crossing. The other apparent changes were the signs of human life.
There were more and more cleared pastures. They passed several carts heading the other direction and were overtaken by a fast-moving coach. And now they saw occasional piles of rotting food and other items discarded or dropped along the roadside. Princess thought it felt like people were winning the fight against the forest in Wessex, while the woods were clearly winning back home. They arrived at Orgeminster in the late afternoon. It was a little smaller than Frome and did not have traveler accommodation since it wasn't at a crossroads. Sin and Orvin paid a farmer to eat with his family and sleep in his barn for the night. Everyone turned in early, exhausted from the day's long hike.